and an honor to be able to introduce the seven paths, the seven spiritual paths of the ancient Vedic tradition that unfolds all the way back thousands of years to the present time, unfolds from the most distant past in the human psyche and becomes interpreted by all the religions, but speaks of only one, the religion of the heart, mind, and body. The one way, the way of the higher self, the universal pathless path. Today, I will speak to you of the sixth and seventh path to complete the six-part series on the spiritual path. First, we'll speak about the path of sublimation. Many of you in the 12-step program, I'm sure, will relate to this path of sublimation or transmutation. To sublimate means to, in the words of Thomas Hickey, raise to a higher state or condition through refinement. Now, what does that mean? Well, it is an alchemical process taken up by human beings which enables a person to see or create something beautiful and noble out of something ugly and difficult. In the 15th, 16th century, there were those who, the alchemists, who wrote about transforming base metal into gold. The spiritual alchemy of which we are speaking is the turning of what is ugly into what is beautiful. The taking of what is difficult and making it, transforming it, creating it into something noble. This is the path of sublimation. It is important not to confuse this path with the negative shadow, cousin, if you will, of this path, and that is the sadomasochistic path, which we see rampant today, not involving merely sexual victimizing and victim circumstances. We see it used in the context of this, of the sexual. But actually, sadomasochism is really about victimizer-victim consciousness. It is one of the lowest states, if you will, of consciousness. It is a consciousness which is closed to the higher self. It is a consciousness which wants to protect the ego at all costs, to protect separateness at all costs. It is survivor-oriented at all costs. This is the shadow cousin of sublimation. Please do not confuse. No, the path of sublimation does not accept the gross level of reality as merely the way things are and have to always be. Its purpose is to take things the way they are, but raise them to something else. As Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese Zen master, teaches, the living Zen master today, if the flower is on the way to the garbage, then the garbage must be on the way to the flower. An individual on the path of sublimation sees suffering as a burning off of what is unnecessary so that the essential and simple self can shine forth more openly and be more accessible and more useful. It's traveling light and learning how to travel light. So it's looking at one's baggage and allowing oneself to let go of the baggage is the path of sublimation. We can't just throw it off the train now. Because we've got to take a look at it. Because these things have a boomerang effect to them, don't they? You know, those difficult experiences that we seem to almost be like a magnet, and we take them to ourselves, it's hard for us to let go. Why? Well, because it's that unawakened state of the ego gratification, ego survival, that is an over-invested in separateness, you see. We'll not want to let go of the pain of its past, because it grows, it is nurtured by that pain. The wounded self is nurtured by that pain. But the path of sublimation wants to burn that off. Okay? Sort of a trial by fire, characterized by the difficult experience of our life. Pain, sorrow, the loss of grief, doubts, fear, obstacles, and setbacks. If used correctly, these experiences can be both physically and psychologically purifying and ripen the self for spiritual transformation. Okay? The notion of ripening we get from the Upanishads. The Upanishads come out of the Vedas, and also the Bhagavad Gita come out of the Vedas. And Thomas Hickey, a modernizer, or you will, articulator of the Vedic tradition, speaks of the need to ripen for spiritual transformation. And, you know, just a word about that. We don't want to ripen too quickly, you know? Nothing is worse than an egg too newly hatched. And, you know, I spoke to you all about that. I mean, I know about that because I've been an egg too newly hatched. You know, I became a reformer fanatic, you know, in the Benedictine monastery where I lived for a number of years. Too newly hatched. All fanatics and reformers who all they do is, you know, try to sell you their religious experience and their perspective and are caught up by the fire of the Spirit are newly hatched. Too newly hatched. And they need to be tested long, long in the fire of transmutation before they really have the substance and maturity to really know of which they speak. Okay? And I know a lot about that because I did a lot of that years ago. Best way to know some paths is by going on them. So I attempt to work with my ducklings to certainly lead them in not making a lot of the same mistakes that I have made in my path. And mistakes are all about, you know, they're all right and they're fine, but there's no need to continue them. You know, this whole notion of the science of mystical life or the science of the spiritual path is a science. And that's why we need helpers and guides to assist us on this path. Our progress would be much more rapid. Okay? Much more rapid. So this notion of ripening is very, very important. And it's very, the slower, the better. Incubate long in the spiritual paths that you choose. 25 years, 30 years, incubate long. If this is the only game in town, you see, the spiritual path. Okay. The path of sublimation as a path of worldly experience, par excellence, is the path of sublimation. It does not hobnob a whole lot in otherworldly stuff. The path of sublimation is a worldly experience. It is like the agitator of a washing machine, which is needed to get rid of the dirt and grime and particulars that cling to the clothes. The one on the path of sublimation uses the experiences of the world as an agitator to get out the grime. That veils the self from its realization. The self in the sublimating path welcomes this agitation which the world provides to act as a cleansing agent. Yes, spiritual tide. The self recognizes essentially that the spirit chooses the existential situation of being in a body with its own set of limits and constrictions. That's what it means to have a body, is to have limits and constrictions. The self, if one grasps the sublimating path and wants to go on that path, realizes that over-identification with body-mind, its changes and shifts, the roller coaster movements between joy and sorrow, happiness and misery, will keep the self really in ignorance of its true nature and over-invested in sustaining the ego identity. Now, I want to let you know about this today. Please, one thing is, I would like you to stay with me till about 10 till. Try to make no exit. And the stuff that you don't, that you're finding hard to grasp, don't even worry about it. Just wait for the next thing that you can connect with. If you can connect with one thing today, this can be helpful for you. And others of you will connect with more things depending upon, you know, you may be relating to this path. Others of you go, well, what is he talking about? He doesn't have a collar on. I don't see him holding the Bible. What is he about? It's a Sunday, ain't it? Yeah. Okay. So just kind of, you know, relax a little bit. And I'm giving you wisdom, a very, very ancient wisdom that perhaps will be useful for you. The self who is unawakened to its true nature. Okay. If you are unawakened to your true nature, how will you act? Well, you will become desperate and frantic in your approach to avoid any experience which will tamper with your ego identity. You don't like any experiences that punch holes in the frail and delicate sheath of the ego, the I-self, the self of the body-mind. This goes directly against this whole kind of religion of the ego, the religion of individuality that was very popular in the 1980s. The path of sublimation is really about turning it over. And what we are turning over is our grime, our vice, our ego self, our limitedness, and our constrictions. We actually turn that over. We turn it over to a guru. We turn it over to a guide. We turn it over to our teacher. We turn it over to our inner teacher. We turn it over to the God of our understanding. God loves our grime. Give it to God. God will take it. You want to give away your bad habits? Give them up right now to God. God will take them. That's what this path is about. Uh-huh. Harder than it sounds, isn't it? Because we don't want to let them go. And this, the path of sublimation is actually getting in touch with all of the stuff we don't like. Give it up. Turn it over. Don't do it anymore. But we'll give you a way of doing that. There is a science about this, you know. I know, well, turn it over. No, it takes a little bit more of a systematic, scientific kind of path. And we'll talk about that. One of the best ways, of course, if you want to go this path and do it systematically, do the 12 steps in the 12-step path. The 12-step path is a great modern example of the path of sublimation, of getting rid of our stuff and cleansing our stuff. It is a great path. A more ancient path, a more ancient example of that, of course, is Buddha's middle path. It is not a path of over excessive austerity and rigidity, nor is it excessive laxness. It is a middle path. It is a middle path. And Buddha spoke of the Four Noble Truths that he learned not from some academic book somewhere, but through experience. The experience of meditating and the experience of being in life, in work, in the world. Okay? And what did he learn? Well, the Four Noble Truths are important before we go on the middle path. One has to get in touch with the truths. One, that there is such a thing as suffering. That's easy. No problem there. And actually, the first truth is that there is suffering in the world. It does indeed exist. And it exists for me. The second noble truth is that suffering is really the result, get ready, of desire. That is, non-acceptance of what is in fear of losing what one has. Whether it's joy, or whether it's a relationship, or whether it's one's possessions, or whether it's one's status, okay? Buddha's second truth was, is that suffering is the result of desire. Three, the third noble truth, is terminate suffering by going beyond desire. Terminate suffering by going beyond desire. Now, that's where a lot of Westerners, especially Americans like ourselves, really mess up on these four noble truths. We think that going beyond desire means we become kind of, you know, we don't want anything, we dry up, you know, we fast, we say no to the world and all that ridiculous stuff. That is the worst thing you can do. I know, I've done it. I've tried to do it. My God, I spent 2 years in the monastery trying to do that. I did not understand Buddha. Did not understand Jesus' path of picking up the cross. Did not understand this at all. I thought that one had to get rid and suppress one's desire. That's what Buddha and Jesus meant. And that's not at all what they... It's very, very important to go to the fourth noble truth to understand that. So the fourth noble truth is, here's how to terminate suffering by going beyond desire, is to consolidate and redirect your desires through organization, discipline, economy, and practicality. In other words, what the fourth noble truth says is take all of your desire, all of your passion, and discipline it, organize it, make it practical. Have a goal in mind in order to focus your desire. And the higher you focus the desire, wow, the higher or more elevated that desire will be transmuted and transformed into. You're with me? That's why it's a path of sublimation. Take all of your desire, all of your passion, all of who you are in yourself, and discipline it, organize it, focus it, and you've got the fourth noble truth of Buddha. And certainly Jesus's notion of picking up the cross in Matthew, taking up the cross and follow. That's what Jesus was talking about. He wasn't saying, you know, make your life totally miserable, you know, and become martyrs and you know, victims and focus totally on suffering and misery. Not at all. Because Jesus also said, my burden is light, didn't he? So take up the cross, and the cross is light. Why is the cross light to Jesus? Because he's turned it over. Why is the cross light to Buddha? Because Buddha has turned it over. Why to Zoroaster and Krishna and Rama? Because they've turned it over. But it's harder than it seems, because it is human nature in our blindness, in our lower self. We do this and then we go. Because we're invested, because that experience, that psychological experience of really turning that stuff over will catapult us and elevate us into another spiritual plateau. And that can be scary, it can be frightening, and at the same time, we're over-invested in all of in our separateness, in our ego identity. So what we're going to let go of is precisely that. Because we will become much more holistic in our awareness and experience. So, we organize, discipline, economize, and practicalize a desire. And that was the fourth noble truth. Now, the eight-limbed path is the body, if you will, the easy way of doing the middle path. It spells out more directly how we are to live between excessive austerity, which we don't want in the middle path, or excessive slackness. Okay? How do we do this? The eight-limbed path, if you will, of self-management is thinking, attitude, speech, conduct, works, self-discipline, mindfulness, and meditation. Buddha says, write this, write that, you know. What Buddha means by right is appropriate between excessive or deficient. Okay, that's what right means. Right does not mean rigid. The middle path is easy. That's why Buddha and Jesus are often connected, because Jesus' path that he set out as a possibility for his disciples, his students, was certainly a middle path. said, yeah, if you want to go direct, you know, you can do. And he had a small little club that he worked with and folks who wanted to go to a more direct version. But one has to be ripe for that direct version. But the middle path is a real tried and true way of achieving, yes, bliss in this world, not in the next. For the kingdom of heaven is within. Just a word about fasting. Because fasting is a part of this sublimating path. You've heard me talk about it. Fast from the media. Fast from TV. But you can't do it. It's like eating one potato chip. It's difficult, but this kind of fasting is, you know, fast from these things. Also, by the way, one of the most wonderful fasting experiences is meditation itself. Fasting from thoughts. Fasting from the whir and buzz of thoughts, ideas, and investment. Now, meditation as centering, you Westerners out there. I know some of you, like me, when I first started meditation, you know what I thought that meant? Meditating profoundly on something. Meditating profoundly on this or on that. In fact, I spent years on using meditation to plan my day. So I would spend 30 minutes or 45 minutes planning what I would be doing during my day, and I call that meditation. This is not meditation proper. Meditation is stilling the thoughts. It is fasting from our thinking. The thinking process that we put so much, don't we? We put so much investment in. We over-importance-size ourselves. Or we under-importance-size ourselves, right? As Thich Nhat Hanh says, we either have high self-esteem or low self-esteem. We just need self-esteem. That's the middle path. And what happens when we get too embedded in our thinking at this level? Okay? Now, mindfulness is a deep thought. Our point is not to not think, but to move into deep thought, which is thought from a level of holistic awareness. Okay? And that's been one of the big mistakes of organized religion that says, believe and don't use your mind. Just trust in the mystery and don't use your mind at all. This is hogwash if you really want to get to the epitome of holistic awareness. One has to use one's mind, just not the way that you've been used to. You use the mind to focus on the silence. You use the mind to focus on the God of your understanding and beyond your understanding. You use your mind to go within, to go beneath your thoughts. And all the meditative techniques are about that. One on the path of sublimation. You are a great candidate if you have an addiction problem. By the way, for the path of sublimation. Because what you need to do is cease reinforcing the negative habit by not doing it no more. Okay? That's really, really important. Folks who do have addiction issues, and I, by the way, I underscore codependency too as addiction issue or relationship dependence. It is important to cease doing the negative habit because every time we do it, we reinforce it. And every time we reinforce the negative habit, which is what? Anything that is life-destructive, life-damaging, and counter-evolutionary is a bad habit. Okay? That's what a bad habit is. And a good habit is anything that is pro-evolutionary. And I mean spiritual evolution. So we evolve spiritually. It is life-affirming and life-supporting is the goal. And that's why we, on the path of sublimation, we are asked to rid ourselves of the bad habits. One cannot act upon that bad habit anymore. So many of you have a real visible activity pattern. It gets more subtle, you know, in those other patterns. And I know that some folks who've maintained sobriety for a year or two start realizing that this game is not as simple as just stopping that substance abuse, right? That there are patterns of behavior. Now, that's the real gold of this path of sublimation is to look at all those patterns of behavior that are life-negating and counter-evolutionary and ceasing those. Certainly, physical purification is a part of the sublimation path. And basically what that means is avoid excess or deficiency through proper diet. Those of you who have eating order issues, listen to what I'm saying here. Fasting. Fast from TV and the media and your negative thoughts about yourself, but please eat properly. Okay? So proper diet and nutrition and exercise and sleep means living a life of balance. Not excess, not deficient. In the path of sublimation. And in other words, what we begin to do is focus on the essential I am rather than the changing and shifting I am this, I am that, I feel this, I do this. I am. This raises and elevates the mind and keeps it from over-identifying with body-mind or the phenomenal world of change. So what I'm saying is, the whole goal of this path of sublimation is to recognize that as we become mindful and we meditate, we focus less on the predicates of experience or the subject or the object of experience. I am this, or I am feeling that, or I am doing that. And we focus on the eternal, unchanging element of that sentence, I am. That's what all of the original words of God, by the way, mean. I am. Yahweh, I am who am. Allah, Allah. I am. We focus on that eternal aspect of ourselves. I am. Once we begin, I am this, we're in our ego. You got what I'm saying? I am running, so. Oh, I am happy. I'm sad, so I'm hungry, so feed yourself. I am. That's the goal. Being. Which brings us to the seventh path. The seventh path is not meant for everybody. The seventh path was taken by Jesus, Lao Tzu, Buddha, Rumi, the big cats. The seventh path is the path of integration of all of the six before it. Fully. Not hobnobbing in one or the other, you know, for a couple of weeks or a month or a year or even 10. But a full integration and working of all the paths. One has to have a lot of energy for that. Okay? And that's why these big cats embrace the seventh path. The pathless path. The path of integrating. The sixth path. Integrating the path which focus on body, mind, and heart. Basically, I'm giving you a summation of all the six paths focus on either body, mind, or the heart. What happens to one on the seventh path is one moves from the first level of consciousness, sleep, to the second, dreaming, to the third, being awake in our ego, all of you listening to me now, to the fourth, awareness of the living one beyond all form, experienced in meditation centering. The fourth state of consciousness. It is beyond organized religion. God beyond the form. The nameless name. That is, when one is opening the Hebrew book and there's an absent word where God is. The nameless name. Right? In the Kabbalah, Ein Sof. Or in the Vedas, Aksara. The primal nothingness in Taoism, out of which yin and yang emerge. The fifth level of consciousness to one in the seventh path is the stage of witnessing. And no, it is not witnessing saying, I'm reborn, are you? This stage of witnessing is in experiencing a sustained awareness of the living one, or wholeness, in the changing world. It is more sustained. It's not only in moments of meditation where we get glimpses of the oneness, or we get glimpses of the unbounded, but it's a sustained experience of the unbounded in the phenomenal world. The fifth stage of consciousness. The sixth stage of consciousness is the coincidence between the infinite awareness and finite phenomena, Hickey calls it. Maintaining holistic awareness through every possible human experience, including the most difficult suffering. Okay? And what comes to mind for me is certainly Jesus' last days. Maintaining holistic awareness in the midst of great trial. Never doubting. But even Jesus doubts, doesn't he? Because to be human, you have to doubt. And Jesus was human. And that's why Jesus, even on the cross, says, God, why have you forsaken me? Reminding that doubt is an important experience to be fully human. But then resignation. Into your hands I commend my spirit. Then Jesus recovers himself in holistic awareness. And like the ancient Hindus who say the last thought of one's life will be the seed of the next, Jesus, like other mystics that have gone before him, accomplish the last thought of suffering before one gives one's mind and body and heart over. One is entirely cleansed and trusting in holistic awareness in the living one in which one participates more than symbolic but actually and fully. And that's why those who are on the seventh path, or the path of holistic awareness, vertical and horizontal wholeness, utilizing and integrating all of the paths, have a lot of power and energy to evoke and provoke self-transformation and creation in the world. Isn't it wonderful that we have these people who have come before us, the sacred scriptures of all the nations that tell us, that have within their deposit great wisdom. The only thing, depending upon the level of awareness, one will either misuse that, abuse that, or look at it correctly. And if one is looking at not from a stage of holistic awareness, but from separate awareness, one will do much damage to the sacred scriptures and to other people and to oneself. We're talking about the unripe. Okay. So as we talk about these paths, basically, in the seven paths that I've spoken to you about, the path of the heart, bhakti, the path of love, for instance, or the path of knowledge, the path of wisdom, the path of the mind, or the path of evolutionary action, okay, or the path of energy, the path of the warrior, path of kinesthetic energy awareness. All of these paths, the path of karma, okay, or the path of sublimation, difficult experiences, the path of beauty, etc. All of these paths, pick only one, those of you who are meant for one. Find out which one is really you resonate with in this cycle of your being. You may have resonated with one before, but usually people will resonate with one or more of the paths, depending upon where they are in their cycle. Go on that path for a while, 5 years or so, 10 years. Get to know it a little bit, and then other aspects will come to you. And I do underscore, have a teacher, have a guide who understands. If this guide does not understand, perhaps this guide has not been on the path that you're meant toward. Because not all guides, in fact, very, very few, are on the seventh path, which is integrating so that they can help you on all the others. But most guides, if they're not going to be intrusive, will help you find a teacher or help you with naming the path that you need and have some sort of familiarity with the paths. So will not encourage you to go on their path, but will encourage you to go in the path that you're needing to go on by an assessment process, of course. Huh? Finding out your where you're at in the levels of consciousness, finding out toward what you're attracted, finding out which kinds of balances that you need in your life, etc. It takes a lot of desire to go on one or more of the spiritual paths. If you don't have it, then I would say, go ahead and burn out whatever you're doing. Don't worry about it. It's not a good idea to embrace a spiritual path if you're miserable or so obsessively compulsive that you have to get it all perfect and you enjoy being miserable. That's that sadomasochism I was talking to you about. This spiritual path is really made for joy, for bliss, to really give us the happiness, the real authentic happiness toward which we were made. It is affirming life and all that is given us. So basically, if you want to understand the path we were talking about today, the two paths, first the path of sublimation, the sixth path, it is whatever you are given, you need it to learn something about yourself. You need to accept it and turn it into gold. And the seventh path, the path of integrating all the paths I've spoken to you before, I will have tapes available in a couple of weeks if you want to study those paths, okay? You can do that and figure out what you want, what you feel you need for your nourishment at this point in your life, and you can work that out with your guide, your spiritual guide who you're working with. And if you don't have one, you might ask your inner teacher inside of yourself to give you an outer teacher. Because a good outer teacher introduces us to our inner teacher. And if you already have one, then perhaps some of this is making sense to you in terms of the paths that we've been talking about over the last weeks. It is a wonderful, wonderful opportunity that I feel and an honor that I feel at this time in history to be able to speak about these paths. And I don't mean these paths to be a judgment toward you, but an opportunity. At a certain level of consciousness, there is no path that is a judgment, but only an opportunity. When I think of this path, or the path of wholeness, or all the paths, Psalm 139 comes to mind. I've sort of given a free translation of it, so forgive me if you don't recognize parts of it, but I would like to end our service with this one and also a very joyful quote by a Sufi mystic. But first, the Hebrew mystic, the Jewish mystic who wrote the Psalms, a school of mystics who wrote those. O God, you search me and you know me. You know when I sit and when I stand. You understand all my thoughts and feelings. And you are with me when I walk or when I lie down. All my ways are open to you. Where shall I go to escape your all-embracing spirit? Where shall I flee to get away from your presence, which pervades and imbues everything? If I climb to the heavens, you are there. If I descend into the very depths of the own hells that I make, you are there. If I fly away on the wings of the dawn, your hand will guide me. You created my inmost self. You knit me together with the fine fabric in my mother's womb. You knew me through and through, and my being held no secrets from you. O God, now test me. Set me on a spiritual path. Know my heart. I am ready to be ripe, to let you guide me on the road of eternal life. And fittingly, to end this series, written by a Sufi mystic, Rumi. What is to be done, O Muslims, for I do not recognize myself? He was a Muslim, but didn't feel he was a Muslim. I am neither Christian, nor Jew, nor Hindu, nor Muslim. I am not of the East, nor of the West, nor of the land, nor of the sea. I am not of nature's making, nor of the circling heavens. I am not of earth, nor of water, nor of air, nor of fire. I am not of the sky, not of the dust, nor of existence, nor of an entity. I am not of the kingdom of Iraq, nor of the country of Khorasan. I am not of this world, not of the next, not of paradise, nor of hell. My place is the placeless, and my trace is the traceless. 'Tis neither body nor soul, for I belong to the soul of the beloved. The living one only I seek. The living one only I know. The living one I see. The living one I call. The living one is the first, the last. Outward, inward. I know none other than the living one, so I say, Yahoo! Which translates in the Aramaic, Oh, living one. Amen, Aum, Om.
The poem by Rumi at the end of this was translated from the Arabic, not from the Aramaic.